It's wonderful to see you. And today's daf in the Sechet Makot is daf Dalet. But remember, we decided that we're going to keep the sugya of Mikvot for today. So that means we start with daf Gimel Amud Beit. And we were in the middle of the various Maimorim that Rav Yehuda Amar Rav said and that Rav Kahana objected to. So we had a list of things that weren't directly in the Nogea Masechet Makot, but that were part of that set. So we're up to today, four lines up from the bottom on Amud Beit. Just get a Kleenex. Things are no longer an easy reach after you put everything away for Pesach. Okay, so we begin four lines up from the bottom. The Omer of Yer Omer Rav. Shloshet lugin mayim shenafel atochan kurtov shol yayin, umarein kemare yayin venaflu lemikva lo paslo. So those of you who have been learning mikvaot, of course, will find this very simple. That since there are a few people who for some reason decided that they're not learning mikvaot with us, so let me explain it. So remember that we have a halacha that in order for a mikveh to be kosher, it cannot be mayim she'uvim, it can't be water that was contained in any type of container, it has to be this natural rainwater or river water, better yet, spring water. And a mikveh needs also to be a minimum of 40 sa' of such water. Now, the Rabbonim were gozer, that in the event that originally the mikveh was not a full 40 saw, then if it were missing the slightest amount and three lugin of mayim she'uvim fell into that mikveh, you've got to get rid of all of that water and start over again, or you've got to pour in so much water that you basically have gotten rid of all of the original water, and you cannot make that mikveh kosher again. Once you have a kosher mikveh, as much water as you add from the faucet is perfectly okay. So the case over here was that you've got the three lugin that were going to fall into the mikveh and passel it, because that was a mikveh that was choser. And in this case, the three lugin of mayim, shenofel atochan kurtov shel yayin, a little bit of wine fell into it and made them look like wine. So they discolored the water, and now it looks like dilute wine. So the din over there is that water, even though it's wine-colored water, the halacha is that it is, according to what apparently it's saying, is that even if it was three full lugin, it doesn't say three lugin minus, even if it was three full lugin of water, fell into the mikveh, it does not passel the mikveh, because apparently we go according to the coloration. The coloration is wine and doesn't appear to be mayim she'uvim. Matki flor of Kahana, I don't understand why you say that. After all, we know that it says beferish in the Mishnah that if you have colored water, it's that food coloring that had fallen into water, and the din is over there that made seva, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Poslina Tamikveh B'Shloshet Lugin. If you've got colored water, it's no different than any other water, and it's going to passel that mikveh by pouring in three lug of colored water, which were Mayim She'uvim, into a mikveh that had a little bit less than the Arba'im Sa'. You can no longer use that water for a mikveh, even if you add more Mayim that is kosher for the mikveh. Now, why is this different? That is Rav Kahana's basic question. Why would wine-colored water be any different than food-coloring-colored water? Well, Malay Rava, so Rava said to Rav Kahana, there's a big difference. What was Rav Yonam Rav was saying was talking about wine. The case in the Mishnah, which was talking about colored water, how do you refer to colored water? You call it colored water, right? Okay, so then water is its primary way of identification. That means water, shlosha lugin of water. What do I care? You might as well say dirty water. Say colored water. But the point is you have shlosha lugin of mayim that fell into a mikveh, and that mayim was mayim puzzle for the mikveh, and therefore since that mikveh never had 40 saw in it, it is kaput. So therefore, because it's maya d'tzive mikre, its name is colored water. In the case of Rav's wine mixed water, it's called wine, very diluted wine. So people would say, oh, can have some of that dilute wine. Okay, but they don't call it water anymore because the chashivas of the wine actually gives a name to it. And so it's called chamra meziga. Okay, but nonetheless, Rabbi Chiya said in a braita that in that very case of Shlor Shalugin, which wine had fallen into, that the din is horido et hamikveh. They actually closed down that mikveh because it was not kosher, because of the fact that it had this wine, what you're calling wine water, it had wine water fall into a mikveh that was chaser. So how can Rav argue on that braita? Amar Rav Alokasha, that doesn't bother me. There happens to be a major machloket between the shitas of the Chachamim about whether color is a critical feature of the water that's going to passel the mikveh. And Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and Rabbanan. So what Rav was saying works out perfectly well. If you take a look at the Mishnah and see the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri indeed holds that color is critical. Masha Inkein, the Brisa of Rabbi Chiya, where they said we could simply ignore the fact that it's colored and has a wine coloration, that is going, according to the Rabbanan and the Tanakhama, in the Mishnah in Mikvaot. And what did the Mishnah say over there? It's not. Shloshet Lugin Mayim. Chaser kurtav. Chaser kurtav means it's missing this tiny amount. And it was colored because nofa letochan kurtav yayin. So a little bit of wine fell into it. Umar and kamara yayin. The whole thing looks like wine. It falls into a mikveh. Lo pisalu. It did not passel that mikveh. Now note, gentlemen and ladies, that there's a big difference between the case that we just mentioned over here and the case that Rabbi Yonam Rav was talking about. Because this case, it says that the three lugin was not all water. It was less than a little bit. It was chaser kurta. So it was a tiny bit missing in the three lugin. In the case of Rabbi Yonam Rav, he spoke about shloshes lugin. There were three actual water lugin, except that the water had become discolored. Now, there's a big difference between these two cases, right? Because if you're talking about there's not physically three lugin of water there, so then maybe that's the reason that they didn't passel the mikveh. But if there had been three lugin of water there, apparently, what's the shita of this Mishnah? If there had been three full lugin of water, then they would have passeled the water, correct? Okay, so then the question over here is, this shita is the shita of the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan are making it very clear, if the water had been discolored, it would not have made any difference, because if there were three lugin of water there in reality, that would have passeled it. The question of what it looked like wouldn't have bothered me. The same thing would be true if you have milk. Milk falls into shlosha lugin mayim, which is chaser kurta. I mean, that's rather obvious, but this is a zuv ein tzorich lomar zu construct. If milk falls into the water, it doesn't discolor the water. It still looks like water. And there, obviously, it would be, in this case, nofel letocho kurtav cholav marim kamari mayim. And I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. But here we're talking about, even if it looks like water, but there isn't water there, the nofel lemikveh lo pisalu. They did not passel the mikveh, even though it looks like water. So this makes it very clear. What we're talking about over here is the fact that we don't physically have three lugin of water. I don't give a hang what it looks like. There's no water here. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, actually, akol holech achar hamar'eh. In the case of the quart of the milk, if it looks like water, then it would passel the mikveh. So what do we see over here? That according to the Tanakhama, the issue is the color, is whether it would look like wine or it would look like cholav. The color is actually not what defines things. It's the question of is there or is there not. pure water of three lugin here. What it looks like doesn't matter to me. Mashenkin, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says everything depends on the color. Okay, so then it's very clear from here that according to the Tanakhama, if you really had three lugin of water, then if it was wine that had fallen in or milk, wouldn't have made any difference. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, no, actually, if you had three lugin of water that looks like wine, then it would go according to the way it looks. If the water looks like water, just a little murky because milk fell in it, then it would actually parcel, even though it didn't even have the full three lugin of water. So then everything makes sense. The brisa that we had before, that we quoted, and it says, horidu et ha-mikvah, that destroyed the mikvah. Yes, that's true, but it's only true according to the Tanakhama, because in that case, the din is that la-libet et Tanakhama, you did have three full lugin of water. And Masha Inkin, Rav is going like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that actually everything goes according to the way it looks, so that there's no problem with Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav's psak, namely that if it looks not like water, looks like wine, then it's fine. It's not going to pass. But wait a minute. I mean, the way that Rav just explained it, Rav, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Rav only works according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. But is that for sure? Because we know that Ami Boy Boiler of Papa, Rav Papa was actually not sure how Rav had the reading in the Mishnah. The way we just quoted the Mishnah, it does not say Chaser Kurtav. It says Shlosha, it says Chaser Kurtav. But if Rav had that Girsa, then he would only work out according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. But if it would have said Shlosha Lugin in the Mishnah, then the Mishnah would have been a totally different Mishnah. And boy, Rav Papa, did in fact Rav have the Girsa we just had? Namely, Shlosha Lugin Chaser Kurtav, and therefore the Tanakhama would be only talking about a case where there was not three full Lugin of pure water. And therefore, we would have been able to be Madaik. Ah, but if there had been three full Lugin of water, that the din would have been, according to the Tanakhama, that it would have passed the mikveh, even though it looked like wine. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was coming along to say, no, it all depends on the color. But if Rav did not have that, I mean, if Rav had that, so then what would have been the Mishnah? If it would have said Chaser Kurtav, it would have been like we have been Madaik, right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would have come to tell me that and according to the Chachamim, no, it only depends if there's water there or there's not water there. Then we would be forced to say that Rav's, meaning Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, was only going like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. That's the way Rav explained it. But maybe Rav had a different girsa, says Rav Papa. Maybe Rav's girsa in the Mishnah did not have those words, Chaser Kurtav. It just had Shlosha Lugin. Now, what would have been the meaning of that? Well, if it would have said Shlosha Lugin, then, which is very interesting because that's actually the way the Mishnah, we learned that that's actually what the Mishnah does say. It says Shlosha Lugin, not Shlosha Lugin, Chaser Kurtav. So if he had that girsa, so then that means that the Rabbanan we're talking about where there were full Shlosha Lugin, pure water, and the Rabbanan are saying, if it goes with wine, then it looks like wine. Even the Tanakhama would hold that it's, if it looks like wine, so then it's not going to passel. So in other words, according to that, the Tanakhama would also agree that color maybe is not critical, but it's definitely one element that comes into our determination. So in other words, you need two things. You need three full lugin of water, yes, and you need to have the color of water in order to passel. So that would be a different Mishnah. And in that case, then Rav would be going according to everybody, because both of the Tanoim, even the Tanakhama, would agree that if the water doesn't look like water, so then it would not passel. And that would not be only true according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So it's not so pasha that Rav is going like Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri. So why did Rava say that Rav can only be going like Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri? Okay, so what's your problem? Your problem is that Rav doesn't agree with Rav Papa? Thank you very much. Since when does Rav have to agree with Rav Papa? So fine, Rav Papa, Rava. Rava doesn't agree with Rav Papa and is an explanation of Rav. Rav Papa, me by the way, Rav Papa wasn't sure what Rav's girsa was in the Mishnah, or Rava Pshitalei. According to Rava, it was quite clear that the Mishnah was the way we have the Mishnah right here, and therefore Rav was only working out according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yosef said, when he was listening into this whole conversation, he said, this is really weird, you know, because, gosh, I mean, I am such a loyal Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda. I thought I knew everything that he said, and I never heard any of this. This is like a really basic kind of conversation, isn't it? And as we know, Rabbi Yosef, unfortunately, had become ill and had lost the memory of a lot of the things that he had once known. And so Abaye gently reminded him that actually, not only did you hear it, but you were the one who taught it to us. So he said, Amale Abaye, Atamatla Nialan, you were the one who taught us this whole thing. And the way that you taught it to us was like this, Hochi Amet Nialan, that Rav actually did not have the words Chaser Kurtav, Beresha, and that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was arguing about the case of the milk. And that was the point. He was saying that with even without the Kurtav, and Rav was also going according to this of Divrei HaKol. So in other words, it's true that Rav Yosef says that the way that Rav Papa thought that Rav maybe had been gores in the Mishnah, you said that actually Rav did not have those words, Chaser Kurtav. And therefore, we would have thought that what you would have ended up saying was that Rav would be going to Divrei HaKol. It's only because what was our diak? Our diak was since it's at Chaser Kurtav. So what does that mean? It means that in the event that it wouldn't have been Chaser Kurtav, then the Rabbanan would have said that it would have actually been puzzled, even though it looked like wine. But you said to us that Rav, actually, the way Rav Papa was thinking, that Rav never had those words of Chaser Kurtav, in which case, what was really the whole machlokas? The machlokas was about the milk issue. And Rabbi Yochanan was arguing because he said, I agree with you that color is critical, but I don't agree with you that you actually need three full lugin of water. You could have three full lugin that look like water because they were partially made up of milk. That's what the machlokas is. But everybody agrees that certainly one factor is the factor of color, in which case Rav would be going according to everybody. So therefore, it turns out that you were the one who had raised all of the issues, including everything that Rav Papa had said here. Okay, so that concludes that aspect of the Rav Yehuda Amar Rav in the argument about the mikveh, and the question is whether the presence of actual water is essential or not. That's a machlokas in this version, according to Rabbi Yosef. That's a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Chachamim, or the original version that we had, which was the way Rava was learning it, and it's actually the version that what we have is that Lotani Chaser Kurtav, as I mentioned in our own Mishnah when we learned it. But when I say what we have, I mean what we have here in Makis, it does say Chaser Kurtav, and according to that, we would have Rav coming out in this machlokas between the Rabbonin and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri about what happens in the event that you're missing water. That's not a problem. That if you're missing water, so then in Achinami, it wouldn't matter what the color is according to the Rabbanan, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can make it up. Okay, the next thing that we had of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav was as follows. V'yomer Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Chavit m'leyamayim shenafal liyam agadol. So now you've got this full barrel full of water. It falls into the Mediterranean. And there's waves, but as you know, the waves are going up and down. The waves are not actually flowing. And so somebody goes, and he goes to the mikveh right there at the place where the barrel filled with water, which obviously is mayim shuvim by definition, if it was in a barrel. Lo alta lo tvila. The tvila doesn't work. Why? Because chayshinan l'shalosh shalugin shalo yu b'makom echad. We're afraid that there were three lugim of mayim that were mayim shuvim that remained in the same place because the water wasn't actually moving. And what would be wrong with that if three lugim mayim stayed in one place? Well, what would be wrong is that we have, remember, a gezeirah derabbanan. Because people used to get confused and believe that if you go into a bathtub, you could become tahor. So because they used to always go, obviously, after going into a filthy mikveh, so they would either take a shower or go into a clean pool, right? Which, of course, we still do. And the idea over there confused them so that there would be people who might think that a bathtub is sufficient to be metayer. Because of that, we made a takona. Anybody that goes into three lugin of mayim that are she'uvim, which a bathtub would become tamei mirabbanan. I mean, obviously, it's not the same level of tuma that he needed to go to the mikveh for, but it's a drabbanan tuma, and because of that, people would then come to avoid it. In this case, maybe when you went into the yam and you were tayvel, part of you, when you were coming out, went through shlosha lugin of mayim she'uvim, and you became tamei mirabbanan. That's what it means. Now, what strikes us as being absurd about this is that all along we know that if mayim she'uvim are put into a kosher mikveh, then they become kosher water. So the Mediterranean happens to be a kosher mikveh, in which case, if the barrel falls into the Mediterranean, it's no longer mayim she'uvim. So what in the heck is this whole discussion about? So now what's fascinating about this is that apparently, there are other girsaot here where this doesn't follow, but we've been learning it according to Rashi's girsa, which would mean that apparently the din of hashaka, in which if mayim she'uvim becomes kosher litfila, is true in terms of making the mayim she'uvim kosher for tfila. But that doesn't mean it's not called mayim she'uvim. It's called mayim she'uvim that are mushakim. And the takon of the Rabbanan was about mayim she'uvim. So the mayim she'uvim retains the halach of mayim she'uvim, legabe the din of being able to make you tamei min Rabbanan. Very strange halacha, but that seems to be the only way to understand Rashi's girsa and approach over here. Because we're afraid shlosha lugin remained in one place, and therefore the person would have been made tamei by going through it. But of course, this is only where we're talking about the Mediterranean. I mean, if water from a barrel falls into a river, I mean, then the river is flowing. So Nahara be'amalo, at that point, of course, the river is going to just mix the water. And at that point, we can't have shlosha lugin b'mokamecha. Tanya nami achi, and we also have the same idea. In this case, we're talking about wine, but the idea is the same. That tanya nami achi, if you have a barrel of wine that falls into the Yam HaGadol, now, in that case, we don't have hashaka, because we don't have water. You can't do hashaka on wine. You can only do hashaka on water. Mayim she'uvim becomes the equivalent of mei mikveh. If wine falls into the Mediterranean, and it actually stays for a minute in one place, you can see this dark coloration where the wine is, and somebody goes into the mikveh, so to speak, meaning he's tovel in the wine part, then there would be another problem, not because of shlosha lugin that are going to parcel him, but because of the fact that he never went into a mikveh. He went into a wine mikveh. It's all very nice if you're part of the Paro family. You know, they would do that kind of thing. I mean, they like blood too. But if you're tevel in wine, it's not a good tefillah. And therefore, hatovel sham lo alta lo tefillah, obviously these words, chayshinan, is the opposite of the whole meaning, and you've got to take that out. This is a whole, certainly according to the way Rashi is learning here, the whole sugya and his girsa, those words make no sense. It's not because of shlosha lugin, Over here, it's because wine is wine, not water. Anyway, so you see from here that it's really true, that in the Mayim of the Yam HaGadol, we do not assume that the water has actually dispersed across a wide area, and even though the waves are going up and down, the wine is happy to remain in one place. Okay, so fine. In fact, it says here about wine, but we can extend that, of course, to the implications if it would have been a barrel of water. So it's coming to distinguish here between the din of Hashaka by Mayim, telling us a tremendous chiddush, that it remains Mayim She'uvim L'gavet Psul of Shloish Elugin, and it's confirmed by the fact that if there was wine there, it would not have dispersed. The same thing in this case is fascinating, that if after the person who was Tomei had been Tevel there, if a absolutely kosher Kikar Shel Truma that was not Tomei falls into that spot, it will become Tomei. Because we have to be choshesh that if the person who was Tomei had gone into the mikveh in the wine, then the wine would have become Tomei from him, because the wine is still in one place. If the Truma now touches the wine, the Truma is going to become Tomei because of the fact that it touched Mashkim Tmeim, and Mashkim Tmeim will passel the Truma. And therefore, taking this to its bitter end, we end up with actual Psul not only not being metamei, but actually being metamei. Yeah. What do you mean, v'chein kikar shel truma? I mean, obviously, it's a corollary of what we just said. If you're choshesh that the wine remains in one place and the person touched the wine, why do I need to know that the wine becomes tamei? I mean, that's part of the seches tyrus. What does that have to do with the dinim here? It just follows naturally. Well, not necessarily. You see, in the case where the person went into the mikveh, I might have thought that we're only choshesh that the wine remains in one place, because anyway, when he went into the yam, he had a cheskas tuma. That's why he was going into the mikveh here in the yam. So in order to change that chazaka, we need to be absolutely certain that indeed, this guy went to the mikveh. But the truma that fell in afterwards was actually tahar. Therefore, it's a cheskas tahar. It does not follow that because we're going to be machmer on the human who we know was tameh to say that he remains tameh, that we're going to be machmer on the kikar shel truma and say that it became tameh. That doesn't follow at all. So therefore, I need to know that I would have thought, hocha uke truma cheska. Famash Balan, that it's not just because of the chazaka, it's because we understand that the wine definitely does stay in one place, and because of that, we don't need the cheskas tuma to make this chumrah. Which brings us to a cue to only works for people who are not sleeping. A cue. Uh-oh, this looks bad. Oh, Sir Richard, I suppose Richie's in the mood to make Doc yet.
No, sorry, Rabbi, yeah. A bit out of it this morning. Well, are we in Zucht?
No, we're not in Zucht, we're in Yucht. I think we should actually ask Doc to introduce this. We don't want just words.
I think so.
I think I have forfeited. We want a care. We want a capitan. We don't want to have the head of a capitan who's heading into an iceberg over here on the Titanic. No, enough of that. Your reputation is already bad enough.
What can you do? I
must
be
good. Doc, it looks like you're on duty.
Yeah, do it, do it. I've already blown it.
You got to mute. Unmute him. Yeah.
Zog the Heilige Mishnah.
Wow. Okay. I see it's Erev Pesach, and we need a full assertion of Litvak appreciation here. But we could certainly put our nose to the, what is it? I could use a little bit of whatever Richie's got there. Okay. Me'idim anu be'ish ploni. Next case. And this takes us into the deeper understanding of the Lotan Ebre Acha Eid Shaker. Because remember, one of the things we were discussing, we asked, why is it that if we're not going to be Mekayim, the din of Hazoma, that we are going to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of giving them Malkus as sort of a replacement for the Hazoma, and we learned that out from the astonishing interrelationship of Vitzdikos Atzadik, Vershiyot HaRasha, which is actually only understandable if we're talking about Edim Zomamim, and the way that the Torah said, Vihipilu HaShofet, in that conjunction. We asked yesterday, if that's the case, I mean, wouldn't we just be able to say that it's because of Lo Ta'aneh B'Re'acha Et Shaker? So we explained why Lo Ta'aneh would not have been a solution. Here it turns out that we have a machlokas about whether Lo Ta'aneh adds an additional dimension for Malkus besides the Malkus that would be applied due to the Yipilu HaShofet in that strange parsha of Itzdikos HaTzadik. So the question would be like this. It's a typical case. Two witnesses come in. They say, Me'idimanu be'ish ploni shechayev l'chaveru matayim zu. So this is classic. They say the guy owes $200 to his friends. It turns out that they were never there on that day and they were nimtzu usamanim. Wow. Lokin u mishalmim, says Rabbi Meir. They have to get Malkus just because they gave false testimony. And in that, they were over on the Isser D'Oraisa that appears in the Luchos Abris, Lo Ta'aneh B'Re'acha Et Shaker. And therefore, they get Malkus for that, and they still get their Kasha Zomam because they were in no reason to potter them from Kasha Zomam. Because look, we're talking about two different issues over here. Shelo Hashema Mevi'an Lidei Makot, Mevi'an Lidei Tashlumim. It's not the Torah's pasuk that brings the Malkus on them, namely Lo Ta'aneh, which is the same pasuk that brings the Tashlumim on them. I agree you can't give two things for the same act, but that's where they're both variations of the issue. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to give them both Malkus and payment if we didn't have two separate psukim, but over here we have two separate chiyuvim. We have one chiyuv asitim lo kasher zomam. What does that have to do with the fact that the Torah says that you're not allowed to testify falsely? One is a din sort of like for Adam that come to hurt another person, and the other is just for the fact of false testimony. So therefore, there are two different issues. Give him Malkus for the false testimony and have him repay for his nefarious plans of taking $200 from this guy. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Whereas the Chachamim say, you can never have two separate punishments for the same crime. And therefore, kol ha-mishalem, if you're going to be paying, you are not going to be getting Malkus. So we're going to go in the Gemara and see how we know such a general principle. But kol ha-mishalem, in Oloka, which is a Gavi principle, or should be, assuming that Ori has access to the computer this morning. Me'inim anu be'ish ploni. How about a slightly different case? How about if the Adim had lied about the person's chiev from Malkus? They said, we are made that this guy went and he ate a trefa sandwich, and we had warned him that if you eat a kezias of that, you're going to be over on an Isser D'Oraisa and he's chiev Malkus. And it turns out that they were lying. They weren't there in Isser Zomamim. So by Rabbi Meir's logic, they would be chayev two separate malkiot, which would mean instead of malkut arba'im, they would get malkut shmonim. So they would receive malkus for Lo Ta'aneh B'Re'acha Et Shaker, A, umishum vasitim lo kasher zamam. And it just so happens to be that in this particular case, they were also going to be chayev malkus because of that was what their edus was. It's the same as the case before, except the chiddush is that according to Rabbi Meir, you would actually get two separate malkios for the same act because you have two separate makoros for the malkus, one from Lo Ta'aneh and one from Vasitem Lo. The Chachamim Omrim, Enam Lokin, Ela Arba'im. Now, this seems to be a different question because in this issue, you can't say, call him a Shalem Eno Loka. If you're paying, you can't get malkus. What paying? Nobody's paying anything. This is a new question. Can you get two separate malchios? That's the question. And we're going to have to see why it is that we don't mechayev a person for two separate lavim, even though there's no tashlumin. Okay. So says the Gemara, I understand the Rabbanan very well. Bishlam al Rabbanan. Everybody knows the pasuk that is in the very din of that Edim Zomimim of Vihipilo Hashofet. Remember that that is the Makor, as we learned yesterday, or in the introduction to Makos, that the Makor of all of the Malkios is incredibly from Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, which is thrown in completely illogically and unexpectedly into the parsha of the Vasitim Lo, of the Tzdikos HaTzadik, Virshiu Et HaRasha. And over there it says V'Pilo HaShofet, which is followed by Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho. And where it says V'Pilo HaShofet, it specifies V'Hikohu Kidei Rishato, so that he's supposed to get Malkus in accordance with that one Rish'ah that he did, namely that he actually was testifying to Sheker. That's Kidei Rish'ato. So I understand why that would be true. How do I know which Rish'ah it is? Is it the money or is it the Malkus? Fine. That is actually something that we learn not directly here, but we know that it's the specifically that Rishus, because as Rashi explains, in Ksuvis, we learn it out from, instead of saying Kol Haloke Eino Mishalem, we say Kol HaMishalem Eino Loke, and we learn it out from the Pasuk, specifically of the Torah telling us that Einim Get Tashlumi. So that we'll see as we go along. But that makes sense to me, and I don't need any further explanation. But what the heck is Rebbe Meir saying? Does he not agree that it says Kidei Rishato, and that very clearly is saying you only are mechayev a person once, Kidei Rishato? Says Ula, he learns it out from a Beferish Pasuk. Rebbe Meir learns that then, that you can both be local umeshalim from a Beferisha case, Motzi Shemra. What's the din of Motzi Shemra? Remember Motzi Shemra, he gets married, and now he accuses his new wife of having committed adultery because he discovered that she wasn't a virgin. And he claims that he knows that she actually had slept with somebody. Anyway, what's the din over there? So by making that claim, and it wasn't true, by making that claim, we do two things to that man. First of all, it says v'yisruoto. First of all, we beat him up. So that means we give him malchus. And it says that he has to pay 100 shekel for claiming such a thing, which means that he gets both malchus and mishalim. So says Rebbe Meir, I don't understand how you could even have any question about this if the Torah has a specific pasuk that says the shoftim will go ahead and lakhu ziknei ha'ir et ha'ish ahu v'yisru oto, that the bezdin of that city will take this guy and will beat him up. And then the next pasuk says v'anshu oto mea kesef, they will fine him also 100 kesef. So what are you telling me you don't get malchus mishalim? I mean, there's not going to be nothing more clear than this case that says it's exactly what we do. We beat the guy up and we fine him. So how in the world could anybody even argue on that? Mamotzi shemra loka umeshalim, afkol loka umeshalim. That's the din. Well, wait, there's a big difference though. Motzi shemra, after all, is a fine. You can't learn out from a fine, which is a criminal penalty. You can't learn out the special halacha of anything else, because any fine, being as it's a new concept of a penalty where somebody didn't cause an actual loss, is considered to be a chiddush. And a fine is never a proper archetype. It's not a model that can be used for the dinim in the Torah. From dine knas, you can't learn out dine momenes. Ah, but Rabbi Meir, you see, holds like Rabbi Akiva. And remember, Rabbi Akiva said that edim zomimim is also a knas. Aha. So we're simply learning out the dinim of knasot, meaning that you see from Otzi Shemra, if you're paying money for a knas, such as edim zomimim, says Rabbi Akiva, if you're paying money for that knas, you also will get malchus. So Rabbi Meir says, I'm being perfectly consistent with Rabbi Akiva Shita. Now, actually, there is a mirror image. I'm sorry, there's an alternative to Ula's application here, which is that Ula explains that you're learning it out from Motzi Shemra. Ula never said that about Rabbi Meir. He said it on this Braita. It says in the Torah about the Korban Pesach, of all interesting things. So, gosh, why would we be thinking about a Korban Pesach? So it says over there, "V'lo totiru mimenu ad boker, v'hanotar mimenu ad boker, be'esh tisrofu." Okay, what does that mean? Don't leave it to the morning, and anything that is left to the morning, burn in a fire. Ah, ba katuv liten aseach halotase, lomar she'en lokin alaf. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the way to understand this, "Hanotar mimenu ad boker, be'esh tisrofu," is that the Torah has created over here a classic lav hanitak la'aseh. This is a lotaseh. Don't leave over your Korban Pesach. And if you do leave it over, here's what to do about it. Go and burn it. So that means you have a mitzvah of how to deal with it. Anytime you have a mitzvah of how to deal with what happened when you were over on the lav, then that mitzvah is the tikkun of the lav, and there's no longer an azara with an onesh on that lav. So therefore, there's no problem. You stole money, and you were over on the lav of Lo Tignov. Well, there's a mitzvah veheshiva tagizela. Give it back. So the giving it back means that you would be putter on what it is that you stole. You divorced the woman that you weren't allowed to divorce because she had been a rape victim of yours. So then remarry her, and so on and so forth, right? So the idea over here is a classic case of lav hanitak la'aseh. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Akiva says, no, that's not the reason that you don't get malchus for notar. The reason is because it's a lav she'en bo ma'aseh. That's because it's completely passive. You did not finish eating your Korban Pesach. Thank you very much. So I should have eaten it. Okay, but any time that you have a lav that has no maisa associated with it, then you cannot be mechayev in malchus. So now, how did Ula get involved in this? Because look, the mashma'ut over here is that Michlal de Rabbi Yehuda Savar, that Lav She'en Bo Ma'aseh Lo Kin Olav. If Rabbi Yehuda says that the only reason that in this particular case you do not get Malkus is because it's a Lav Anitik La'aseh, and he does not take Rabbi Akiva's approach and say that the reason that you don't get Malkus is because you didn't do anything and it's a Lav She'en Bo Ma'aseh, apparently he holds that even a passive Lav is Chayev Malkus, right? So where would he get that from? Because remember, if the model of all lavim that you get malchus on is indeed lo tachsom shor b'disho, it's amazing how this whole mesechet is revolving around those few lines. If it's about lo tachsom shor b'disho, then your model is a lav that has a maisa, because you'd have to muzzle up your ox in order to be over on the lav. So where would Rabbi Yehuda get the idea that we can extend the chiyuv of malchus, which is vihi pilu hashofet, which occurs together with edim zomimim? So where would we get the idea that you would be chayev on a lav she'en bo ma'aseh? That's the question. And it's here that Ula came to the rescue with what we had applied to Ula's appreciation of Rabbi Meir. And it's here that Ula said, Omar Ula gamar mi motzi shemra. Actually, Rav Yehuda learns out that since we beat up a motzi shemra, now he didn't do anything. It's a lav she'en bo ma'aseh, It was just speaking. Speaking is not considered to be an action. We'll see whether we have a machlokas about that later. Af kol lav she'eino bo ma'aseh lo kina lav. And therefore, this becomes the mocker for Rav Yehuda to believe that the reason that you don't get malchus for notar is because it is coupled to a mitzvah aseh, and it's a lav handitek la'aseh. But the fact that you didn't do anything, passivity, is no reason for us to say you wouldn't get malchus. That was the basis. Asks the Gemara on Ula, now wait a minute. You can't learn anything out from a Motzi Shemra, because a Motzi Shemra violates the normal din that you cannot both pay and get malchus for the same thing. Remember that generally, and Rav Yehuda ascribes to this as well, that he doesn't go along with Rabbi Meir, he agrees that kol haloke eino mishalem. What about the case of the Motzi Shemra? He is loke umeshalem. The Motzi Shemra is clearly an exception to all normative halacha. And it's the one case where we're so angry at that guy, we beat him up, and he also has to pay for saying such nasty things about his wife. Okay, so that's special. How can you use Motzi Shemra as an indication that any love that doesn't consist of doing something you get malchus, if anyway we're treating the Motzi Shemra in a completely non-normative way because we're also doing both malchus and tashlumim? So it's certainly not a good source to derive normative halacha from, right? That's not a good explanation, says the Gemara. El Amar Reish Lakish, I say, not like Ula. The reason that Reish Lakish says that the reason that Rav Yehuda says that a lav she'ein bo ma'aseh would get malchus, as opposed to the reason in here by notar that it's a lav anitek la'aseh, is because he learns it out from Edim Zomimim. That's exactly the point. He says, what are you talking about? You're bringing me a raya from Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, but Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho is part of the din of Edim Zomimim. Well, what's the din over there? Edim Zomimim, they can get malchus even they didn't do anything, right? They can simply get malchus by talking, and therefore afko lav she'in bo ma'aseh lokina lav. Therefore, the halacha is over here. Also, anytime that you'll find a lav she'in bo ma'aseh, you will get malchus for it. Now, wait a minute. Edim Zomimim is also not at all a normative halacha, because as we know, Edim Zomimim are punished even though they cannot be warned. We have no way of warning the Edim Zomimim, because what are we going to tell them? Now, you better not be lying. Why? Meanwhile, what the heck is wrong with you? Shut up. So, I mean, that's considered to be hatra'atz, a fake. I mean, we see a guy with a gun in his hand and we say, don't pull the trigger. That's not Atra, it's a fake. But if we see a guy giving aids, we tell him, don't be lying. Okay. So in that case, what I'm about to do is a lie. I mean, who said? So therefore, they don't need the standard hatra'a, and therefore, they're also not a normative source to learn from. So how can you learn from that? They don't need hatra'a. Well, that may be true, but Motzi Shemra, Yochiach, this guy who was lying about his wife, we told him, now listen here, you better not say this, because we know that it's not true. Your wife was definitely never slept with another guy, and your claim that she wasn't a virgin is not so, and we have testimony to that effect, and you're lying, you're going to get malchus. No, I insist. Okay, so that guy went ahead, and he said the lie anyway. Right? So what is the din over there? Okay, that's a standard case. So it can't be the fact that you don't need hasra that is the element that is b'chayev you, even though it's a lav she'in bo ma'aseh. Yes, but we just showed you. That's because the Motzi Shemra is a special case because he's lokin u'meshalim. So, I mean, that's not the reason that Edim Zomimim are the mocker. So in that case, it's not Lokinu Mishalmim. So basically, put the two together, and what do you have? The lowest common denominator. And that is called a tzad hashaveh. So, v'chazer adin, lo rizek rizeh, v'lo rizek rizeh. Fine. I try to prove it from Adam Zomimim. You tell me, oh, Adam Zomimim, that's not normative, no atra'ah. Yeah, but atra'ah is not the important point, because the Motzi Shemra has the same. Yeah, but Motzi Shemra, after all, is lokan u'mishalmim. Yeah, but that's not the important point, because you have exactly the same case by Adam Zomimim. We're not lokan u'mishalmim. So what's your common denominator? The fact is, the bottom line, all cases that we have so far, these two cases, Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh, and you get Malkas for it, whether it's an Eid Zomim or whether it is a Motzi Shemra. So there you have it. So Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh, Lokin Alav, and therefore, says Resh Lakish, this is how Rebbe Yehuda knows, Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh, Lokin Alav, and the only reason that you will not get Malkas for passively leaving over your Karban Pesach is because the din is that it's a lava nita glase, and the lava nita glase, that is what Rav Yehuda is coming to tell you. And that's what Rav Akiva is saying. No, that's not the reason. That's how I understand Rav Yehuda. Now, wait a minute, says the Gemara. Why can't we say that there's another tzad hashaveh? The common denominator is that Motzi Shemra is a knas, and Adam Zomimim is a knas. So maybe it's only where there's a knas that we could say that you would get Malkus for not doing a Maisa. Maybe that's special. Nah, that doesn't bother me, because what makes you think that Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Akiva, that Adam Zomimim is a knas? I mean, that would be a good question if Rabbi Yehuda held like Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of Rabbi Akiva, and therefore we have a perfectly good basis, says Rish Lakish, in the two dinim. Yes, but there's another common denominator here, which means that you cannot say the common denominator is that you get Malkus for a Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh. I'll tell you what the common denominator is. Both of these cases, Motzi Shemra and Einim Zomimim, are extremely not a normative application of halacha. It's not just that they have a special din. They violate principles that are all over the Torah, effective judicial principles. We have a principle that we cannot apply an onesh to a person unless we know that he knew for a fact that what he was doing was prohibited and what it's going to make him responsible for, and he has to be makabel that. I mean, it's a whole long member sugya that we had back in Sanhedrin. It's not like a small point. It's a point of fundamental justice. And this other halacha of the idea that we had by Adim Zomimim, that so that halacha, you need to give hasra. That's a violation of norms. And when it comes to the Motzi Shemra, we have kol ha-Torah kula. We will never apply two separate onashim for the same risha. It's kidei rishato. So that means that this is like, again, a fundamental distinction from all judicial norms. I mean, how do you put together two cases that are fundamentally different than everything else and say, well, we can make a common denominator because we can effectively ignore the fact that one of them doesn't eat hasra, and we can effectively ignore the fact that one of them is loko mishalim? You can't effectively ignore that, because that's the reason. Maybe the whole point is that where you have those types of issues that are part of a set of things that are a departure from judicial norms, then lokin, the din is, you're lokin on a lav she'ein bo maaseh. But how can you make that a general principle of law based on something that goes against general principles of law? That is called a tzad chamur. Tzad chamur, this is the way Tosus understands tzad chamur, something that's a violation of standards. Answers the Gemara, look, Rabbi Yehuda does not hold that tzad chamur itself is a common denominator. You have to look at the specifics of in what sense is it chamur, and then you can cancel the two by putting them one against the other. It's too much of assuming a non-coincidence, says Rav Yehuda, to say that it's only the fact that they're non-normative. Okay, that you can understand that that might be a fine explanation. So according to Reish Lakish, is the basis of Rav Yehuda saying, Lav Shem B'Maisa Loikin Olav, is this Tzad HaShava, and the way that we had understood, therefore, the notar issue means that he derived from this Tzad HaShava, not from Ula's Limud. Okay, all of this is not directly nogea us in the Mishnah, but you must admit it's an awfully fascinating application of the issues of of Edim Zomimim that come up in the same pasuk. Anyway, so getting back to the Mishnah, we have to worry about, according to the Chachomim, if we're not going to give malchus for aid, lotane breyacha aid shaker, what is the purpose of talking about lotane breyacha? Why did the Torah tell it to us if we can't act on it? What do you mean? Of course we act on it. How do we know that we can punish Edim Zomimim? Only from the fact that it says lotane breyacha aid shaker. So in other words, we would not be able to give any onesh at all to Edim Zomimim unless they were warned not to do what they're doing. So where's the azhora for Edim Zomimim? It comes directly from that pasuk, of course. And according to Rabbi Meir, that's interesting. Why doesn't Rabbi Meir say we have two separate dinim? We have the azhora and we have the onesh. We're coming in the Mishnah to say, well, we're going to give him makas because they were over and false testimony, and it says to do to them what they wanted to do. Wait a minute, what do you mean to do to them? Do you mean to give them makas? Because they wanted to hit another guy? Where's the azara? We never give an onesh without an azara. So Rabbi Meir should actually say it's not two different things. It's all the same thing. Lotan ebreach ha'ed shaker is the basis for our giving him the malchus for kasher zamam. Like, why does Rabbi Meir say that they're two different issues? Ah, it says Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir holds that we know the azara from the fact that the Torah says specifically that vahanisharim, those who witness what we do, and that we kill Edim Zomimim that wanted to kill others, it says anisharim yishmu viro v'lo yosifu lasot od kadavar hazeh bekirbecha. People shall learn never to do something like this again. What does that tell you? Don't do something like this again. Speak no edus shekers. That's enough of a azara, isn't it? Yeah, wow, that's pretty good. So why didn't the rabbanim use it for an azara? And then they would have to ask themselves, so why does it say lotan ebreche shaker? Right? They say, rabbanan, ahumi boile lahakraza. That's coming to tell me that somebody who was actually punished by Misa, but because of his Edim Zomimim, he has to be proclaimed as this. Rabbi Meir says, well, I know the proclamation. It says, Yishmu'u v'yirou.